This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for Wednesday, November 7th, 2012. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly, and I'm here, of course, with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. Good evening, all our listeners in the chat room, live and archives. Glad to be here. Good night. Obama won last night, so we're doing the show the night after the election. So for those in the archives, you can get a good sense of the timing of what day this is. And myself, although I don't live in the U.S., I'm a very happy girl today.
Yes, many of us are. So anyway, we got the elections out of the way. And that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm happy about that. Hopefully the world can kind of get back to business now.
I agree.
So we're going to be entertaining questions from our listeners and otherwise tonight on a variety of topics. So there's probably something for everybody, things you probably wondered about. And so we'll get to those in a moment. Just like to take care of our introductory comments. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly radio program, MCHS Church also operates the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, a metaphysics school offering bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysical humanistic science with specializations in spiritual counseling, life coaching, holistic healing, paranormal science, ufology, and several others, hypnosis included. If you'd like more information, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. And also, before we get into our main topic, we want to do our profession of beliefs. The spiritual philosophy of MCHS Church is based upon 9 principles of belief. These principles of belief are, number one, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number two, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number three, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number four, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number five, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number six, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both the physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number seven, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these three synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number eight, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. And number nine, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. For more information on these 9 principles of belief, please visit mchschurch.org. And there's also membership information there as well. So tonight we take questions from listeners, and if you do happen to be listening to this broadcast live, you're more than welcome to ask questions in the chat room or even give us a call. Of course, Dr. John Hightower is behind the scenes screening calls. So if you'd like to, or the number is there on your screen. All right, so Vicki, you've got a question to start us out with, do you?
Well, I get lots of questions. You know, just so that our audience knows, we frequently get emails individually as well as together through MCHS or IMHS. So we're going to address some of those that, you know, it's a little difficult even through emails. It's so much easier verbally to explain ourselves. So we thought we'd take this opportunity to address as many as we can, you know, because it's a wide, wide array of questions and topics. And we also have a school forum for people who are not enrolled in the Metaphysics Institute degree program. We have a student forum. It's a little internal blog that people can go into and, you know, write back and forth. And there's always loads of questions and topics. And actually, some that are really interesting stuff. We have really interesting students enrolled in IMHS. So we never have a shortage of questions being asked. Now, between Doug and I, we've covered a lot of territory in the field of metaphysics, each with our own kind of, I guess, expertise, we could say, hey, Doug, you know, our own areas.
Gifts.
Yeah, you know, I've been a reader for over 40 years. I've been reading tarot for over 35, 37 years now. And along the way, because of my curiosity, there isn't much I haven't in some way encountered, come across, or studied as a point of interest. But I like to narrow down my own kind of area. So some of the questions that we're going to answer tonight or even address may be just a little bit out of our own particular area, but it's certainly in line with what we have, you know, some kind of background to have read up on or have met people who are experts. For instance, there's a healing question, Doug, that I have actually been asked this particular question many times. I don't do the healing work. I like to put that on to other people. I like to send that. I can tune into bodies. I'm pretty good with health issues, actually. But I don't actually do the hands-on body work. I like to have a network of people that I can refer folks to or just give them some good advice about what to look for when you're wanting or needing a healer. But in this particular case, it's from healers themselves. And one of them being, I tend to get sick after I have tended to clients. You know, what is that about? After all these years, you know, what am I doing wrong that this still happens? So this is one we can both answer, Doug, because we both, you know, encountered this before. But just off the top of my head, I want to say that you're a conduit of the energy. Don't take on the energy. And I think this is the error that even as a reader, I have to say that I can't take on and let that energy sit there. I have to release that energy. Now, what does that mean, release the energy? It's don't have an attachment to it. And attachments are inevitably emotional. And I think very often the tendency in healing work is to have too much empathy. You know, empathy hangs on. And it wants to fix somebody. It wants to, you know, transform that energy. I remember many years ago, and I have done this work, I just don't like to, but whenever I would be mingling or hands-on or helping somebody with a headache or something, I tend to get the headache. And I realized that I wasn't calling upon, let's say, a body of white light to come through me and accentuate the healing energy, I was actually taking it on. So very important point to make in any kind of healing work, do not take on people's energy. And if you do take some of it on, make sure that you emotionally release it. That is the key. In my view, it is the key. It's kind of like if it has a place to attach, that's where it's going to attach. Would you agree with that, Doug?
Yeah, energy healers need to be facilitators, just like, you know, in any other capacity. If counseling or coaching or reading or whatever. You know, you're facilitating it. And don't want to underestimate the power of deliberate intent. You know, if you direct that energy or facilitate in directing that energy to the individual, it let it do its work. And, you know, this is just excellent advice. I mean, we can extrapolate this to personal relationships. You know, we don't want to take on other people's stuff anyway. So, you know, that would also fall into this area as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's very difficult to separate. You know, I had an email just yesterday from a client of mine, of whom I've used your life leadership paragon with, Doug, and she made the comment that, actually I sent a copy of this to Doug, just forwarded it on, but she had mentioned that it's not as easy as it sounds to not give unsolicited advice.
Yeah. It's actually real easy if you just stop doing it.
I know. Well, in her view, you know, she said that she'd always thought she was helping people, you know, by making suggestions, giving advice, and so on. But
well intentioned, and that's a lot of people do have good intentions when they give unsolicited advice. But there's bigger issues. Those when we give that unsolicited advice, we're essentially trying to assume responsibility for the other person, and we don't have that right. And it's codependent anyway, so we don't want to go there.
It's very difficult to let it, you know, life breathe between us. So whether it's, you know, in healing work and even in readings, to be honest, and then in relationships, of course, as you mentioned, Doug, that to let that, you know, space breathe between us where we allow free will, you know, and it's that being respectful, you know, of each other's place. Like if a healer is working on someone, just know that's not your illness. Or that's not your energy. And maybe people aren't there just for, you know, a particular illness. Maybe it's just to have an energy alignment, a little balancing. It's not your stuff. It doesn't belong to you. You don't own it. You're just, as you said, Doug, the facilitator. You know, I always use the word conduit, which it's all the same.
Yeah, same.
And thing. Sure. And just being a support to somebody else. That's all you're there for, is to be a support. And I think we can take that right into relationships. We're making that kind of comparison that we're here to support each other, you know, and facilitate each other's growing, you know, our ideas and our journey, not take stuff away. You know, I have a thought that I have kept in my mind for many years. If you're willing to take away my pain, you're willing to take away my joy. And mm-hmm. that... It always is a little catch 22 there, you know. So keep that in mind. If it, you know, you want to know where your own neediness is very often. Also, if you're very used to doing the giving and you can't receive, then you want control of the giving. So it's just the little things that's all still back in line with, you know. I love your life leadership paragon, Doug. I'm a fan. So
yeah,
you know
it's
that.
Powerful.
It is very powerful stuff. So I'm hoping that we've, you know, generally kind of addressed that question. I've got a list of them, Doug. Do you have a question you want to talk about?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I also wanted to mention Dr. John Hightower tells me that we had a caller and the call was lost or dropped or something. So if you have a question for us and you want to call back, or if that's not you and just you have a question and you want to ask, you're more than welcome to call in. The number's on your screen there. And you'll then get to talk with Dr. John Hightower before you talk to us. All right, so this question is paranormally related. And I've got a couple of these that I want to talk about. And I'll start with this one. I got an email, a week or two ago, from somebody who... says that while he was sleeping, he was attacked. He has two sets of three scratches on his right forearm. He took a picture, that is, and sent it to me, and I saw him The scratches are, they didn't even bleed or anything. They're just like red lines kind of on his inner elbow area. Anyway, he says he's having health issues and he feels like he's possibly under some form of spiritual attack. And so I had an opportunity to talk with this gentleman, and real nice guy, and real down to earth too, which is good. And so let's talk about this, because we get a lot of people who wonder, I've gotten a lot of questions, people who wonder if they, you know, got spirits or mean spirits or in even some cases demons or that kind of a thing attacking them. And the answer in a nutshell is no, you don't. And let's explain why. With this particular case, I had to get some questions out of the way. And I asked him a slew of questions just to rule out some things. I talked, I wanted to know, and this is just a kind of a rule of thumb. I want to know about relationships. Are you in a toxic relationship? How's the home life? How's the job? Do you have a job? Did you lose your job? What's causing stress in your life, if anything? So I ask questions to get those things ruled out, if nothing else. I ask about prescription medications, if they're on any kind of psychotropic drugs, medication for any kind of mental illness or anything, then that's where we end, because I don't treat mental illnesses, and there's just nothing I can do beyond that. So what I'm really looking for is to determine, is there any kind of paranormal activity going on? In most cases, there's not. But, hey, it could happen. And I suppose it's happened once or twice, but very, very rare. So I asked him all these questions, and it seems like there was some stress in his life. And I personally believe he was carrying some guilt. His teenage daughter had died unexpectedly 5 years previous, and it had resulted in before that, he had split from his wife, and so there was some stress there. He was between jobs at the moment, so there were some stressors in his life that could possibly do that, or account for some of the things. And some of the other things that were going on, in addition to these scratches he woke up in the middle of the night with, their dog and their cat are acting a little bit strange, staring and growling at a empty area of the house. And another question that I always ask is about religious affiliations too, because religious beliefs can really fuel superstition and certain beliefs and so forth. And yes, they were Christians. They weren't, weren't going to church or anything. They were kind of non-denominational, but still nevertheless had the fundamental belief in God and Satan and all that other stuff. And so got all that information. And here's really essentially what I told him. I'm still waiting, really, and this is true, I'm still waiting for a valid, verifiable case where somebody has been attacked by spirits. And when I say attacked, I mean attacked. Scratches on an arm.
In a negative way.
Yeah, I mean, scratches on an arm that don't even bleed, and he said they burned a little bit. That honestly could have come... That could have come from a cat. It could have come from any number of things. And it's just, okay, so what? I've said this 1,000 times. You get scratched when my cat scratches me, and sometimes bad, not anymore, but, they can. And so what? I mean, I got stung by fire ants here a while back, and apparently my body don't like that. So, okay.
Could have been bad spirits.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad. I mean, and those fire ants, they were, they were evil. Anyway, but they got me. And that's worse than anything I've ever seen. So I'm still waiting for a verifiable case where a spirit or a ghost attacks somebody. It just, you can't believe the stuff on TV. It just is not like that. And if they had the power to do that, it's, wow, that it happened all the time. Same thing with possessions. If spirits actually had the power to possess people, it'd be happening all the time. And for those people who believe in demons, if they had the power to possess, it'd be happening all the time. It's just not. Every case I've ever heard of can be attributed to psychological issues, stresses, different things like that. So what I instructed this fellow was, and it's my standard answer, you view spirits and ghosts the same way as you view people, no different. And I also tell them, be far more afraid of humans any day than you are of a spirit, because spirits can't harm you. People can kill you. So it's not, there's no fear. There doesn't need to be any fear. Usually if things are going on of a paranormal nature in a house, it's usually they're trying to get your attention for some reason. And I've also found, just from my own experience over the last many years, is that people with some psychic sensitivity seem to be affected far more. Why? Well, because they have psychic sensitivity. And it also suggests that psychics are kind of like this bright light in a dark room, and they're like a beacon. And spirits and ghosts are kind of attracted to that light, that psychic light, if you will, much like a moths are attracted to a light. And so a lot of times the spirits in these genuine cases can feel like, well, hey, here's somebody with some psychic sensitivity, maybe they can help me. And they may have questions, they may have a message to get through, and they might be lost. I mean, there's a lot of speculation as to what might be going on. And that's all it is, really, at this point, is speculation. But it does seem to hold some water. And so my answer is, view spirits the same way as you view people, no different. Because they are. I mean, they're just people, you know, a different form of existence at this point. And I also share with them the, in my opinion, the panacea for just about everything that ails you, and that is to take your power back. And when I say take your power back, I mean protect your boundaries. Lay down some boundaries, lay down some limits, just like you would with anybody. And I use this analogy. If you're at home one night watching some TV and some stranger walks in through your front door and walks into your kitchen and knocks a plate off or moves something from one part of the room to another, or, you know, flips a picture off the wall and it drops, you know, what would you do? Well, most people say, well, you know, I'd put my foot down, I'd call the police, you know, I'd tell them to get out of here. Well, of course you would. Well, that's the same thing with spirits. Just because they can go through walls and all that does not mean that they have a right to enter your home, your domain. That's a heinous boundary violation is really what it is. And they may not have any ill intent, but you need to take your power back, put your foot down in a firm voice, say, this is my domain, this is my home, I have not invited you here, I don't know who you are, and I don't know how to help you if that's what you're seeking. So I would suggest that you go find somebody who can actually help you. And of course, I tell them, well, they'll send them to me. You know, they can come to my house anytime. So I got research to do, and I'd like them to show up. Of course, yeah. I got Vicky, she can, you know, communicate with him. And so, and you know, that's the whole answer. And so this fellow that I was talking with, he really got it. I mean, and here's another component. This is a very, very interesting component of this whole thing. He's got some health problems, right? Well, he's been to doctor after doctor after doctor. They cannot find anything wrong with him, and yet he has these health problems. What does that suggest? Well, in my experience, any time you go to a doctor, one doctor after another, and you can't pinpoint the problem, well, you know, we're talking about a spiritual issue here. We're talking about a manifestation of the unconscious of a spiritual nature. Something's out of its proper order. We've talked about this on previous shows. If you're experiencing adversity, that's simply a state of disorder. Something's out of its proper order. And it can manifest in the body. And that's what was happening. And this all made sense to him, perfect sense to him. So I gave him the tips, take your power back, state in a firm voice, just like I said earlier, this is my home, I don't know who you are, I cannot help you, please move on, do not affect the animals, do not touch me, move on. And you say it firmly. And
I have a spirit or some energy that keeps turning on my alarm clocks.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day, it fired up my water filter system. And I go in there, and I can't stop it, and I'm pushing all these buttons. I think, what the heck just happened here? Like, okay, that's it. I'm done. That's enough now. Before, it was kind of entertaining. Not entertaining anymore. Stop. And do you know that water filter system stopped?
Well,
and I said, geez, I wish you'd show yourself. Like, that's it now. I'm done. Like, you're not funny anymore. So, mind you, the most bonkers thing, all of the off buttons are on, you know, a set on my alarm clock. The other day, it went off at a particular time. An hour and 10 minutes later, it went off again. And I went in there, and I smacked. This time, I'm just about ready to throw it against the wall. It's pretty loud, too, because, again, all the off buttons are set to off. And so there's no reason for this darn thing to go on. It's electric, plugged into the wall. So I smacked the snooze button. I said, that's enough now. And it didn't happen again.
So, well, that's good.
Somebody's trying to get my attention. I just think they'd show themselves. Just, I'm usually pretty good about this. But I think, here's the thing. I think it could be that I need to tune in. I need to change my frequency to be able to connect with this energy, whatever it is. And or it's somebody from the other side who has yet to figure out that they can come forward. You know, that's kind of where I'm leaning to, because I've only been living in this particular place for a few months. Mind you, it happened before, if you recall, Doug, we talked about that. So I think it could be, this is just a speculation on my part, someone from the other side just doesn't know how to
mm-hmm.
connect, mm-hmm. manifest, mm-hmm. talk to me. And look, here's the deal. There's nothing I can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like people. Nothing I can do about that. Sorry, just lay off of my alarm clock now.
Yeah,
and
no
kidding. More of my water filter system. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that my cat is possessed. Actually, it's my wife's cat. He is absolutely possessed by a demon, because he decided at 5:30 this morning that I needed to wake up. And so that's what I did.
There you go.
Now, let's address a kind of a related question presented in the chat room here by Dr. Jericho Ibanez. The question is, how can we deal if the question is about a ghost that, according to a pastor, the soul of a person, when he, she died, the soul directly to heaven, then after he will be judged according to his works on earth. The pastor gave a verse in the Bible. Anyway, here's the thing, okay? And then he says, he answered that he could not really get into it because it was involved religious beliefs, and he doesn't do that, which is fine. You know, but I'll tell you this. That's the problem with religious beliefs. And I've talked to people. I had one lady in a related question probably a couple of years ago email me, and I talked to her on the phone. Very nice lady, and she was convinced that a former best friend of hers was casting spells on her and causing her, you know, health issues. And I explained the same stuff as I just went through, made sense to her. I helped her to put up a white light, you know, visualize that white shield of light. And that's not foo-foo stuff. That's just, you know what, you can do that with people. I'm not going to buy into your negativity. I have my shields up. So, you know,
of intent.
Yeah, exactly. It's deliberate intent is all this is. And so she and I told her, look, spells don't work unless you believe they work. And then it's just psychosomatic. And so anyway, it made sense to her, and everything was fine with her. The thing with religious stuff is, because she really thought, and she was praying to God, and she felt like he wasn't hearing, that these spells were still getting through and all that. And so I reasoned with her based on, because I, you know, I used to be a Christian, so I know this stuff. So I reasoned with her based on her beliefs. Now, if you, as an investigator or researcher, have that background, you could potentially do the same thing. You reason with them on their beliefs. Now, with this whole thing about a person being judged according to their works on earth, honestly, and I don't know the exact scripture anymore, and I'm thankful for that, but in the book of Romans, the scripture, I believe, says the wages of sin is death, and a person who's died has been acquitted of his sins. Okay, so that rules out hellfire, doesn't it? If the Bible says that a person is acquitted of the sins when they died, and they don't go to hell, they don't have to suffer anymore because they've been acquitted, they've been forgiven. And so it just doesn't stand up. There's so much in the Christian religion that doesn't stand up. That's why I'm no longer part of it. But unless you're versed in it, you just don't want to get into it. And of course, even if you are versed in it, you may not want to get into it because it can never win. And so, and not that that's the whole point, but you know, if you've got willing ears or listening ears, then you might want to go into it. So I think that's all on that.
The thing about a belief, I think that's the thing about belief systems, is that if you are set in, so you're, let's say your brain's a hard drive, and it's only operating with one set of parameters, it's very difficult for it to open up to new ideas. And even when certain things are disproved to us, like if I say, geez, Doug, you know, there was this spirit that came and possessed me, you know, and I was talking in tongues and blah, 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 and you said, Vicky, did you take your meds? And I'm saying, no, it has nothing to do with that, Doug. It had nothing to do with that. You know, it's going to be very hard to convince me otherwise. Do you see? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is the thing about belief systems. What do we believe in? And so it's to continually reduce it down to just believing in humanity and believing in universality and reducing it to something that's really simple that we can, you know, really grasp, that to me makes better sense. So my next, you know, one of the things I wanted to address here, particularly when I put out the notice that I have a new tarot course available with IMHS.
A certification.
Somebody had written. That's right. And the email had asked, Vicky, I didn't think you could actually teach tarot. She had met a woman previously who's, it's in the family, that you cannot teach to be psychic, you cannot teach tarot. You know, to some degree, I agree with this. Now, but here's kind of why. Anybody can read cards, but not everybody is going to get it, because we each have our own focus, our own, you know, triggers that open doorways to our, you know, intuitions. And everybody does have an intuition. We also all have auto-sensory perceptions, which is interesting because we all have an ability to read energy to varying degrees. Now, being able to learn how to read teacups, tarot, and so on is just learning the focus of it. So it's, my old teacher would say, anybody can read cards, not everybody knows how to be with people. Now therein lies the key. And I hope it's one of the things that I address in this particular, you know, certification. It's a holistic tarot course because it deals with people. It deals with developing yourself. And what you're seeing is what you are seeing, not what some book says. So, yes, you want to read, you know, the general, like the universal understandings. Across the board, you get 100 people in a room and they all agree that, you know, the tower card means rebuilding. Okay, so we take that one concept. But when you look at it, it's rebuilding in context to what? So that's where it's a very individual interpretation by the reader. So anybody can learn how to read cards. Not everybody can grasp the key to being with people and how that interprets. So right. That's what you have to develop on your own. So you either have a knack for it or you don't. But some people, you know, they can walk down the road and, you know, geez, a bird flies and they get a trigger of some kind of a psychic flash or an intuitive feeling about, oh, I know what that means. Now, it's not necessarily the bird. We aren't going to necessarily say, oh, wow, you know, I just saw a blackbird and that means this. It just means that something connected that triggered an opening to that psychic experience. So in teaching the tarot, that's all it does. It teaches how to open that. And what I hope I do in this, and I believe I've done it fairly successfully, is to look at each of the cards, look at how they're together, and see a story. And it's your story. It's what you're seeing for your client or and for yourself, if that's the case. Very, very difficult to read for yourself. And that's because we're biased. You know, we're back to belief systems. You know, it's really hard to look at a whole tarot layout and say, oh, well, I know what that means, because I have a belief system about myself. I have an emotional attachment, and there's various things that are in the way. So, but it's much easier for somebody else. There's more objectivity. Not only that, we're connecting with an auto-sensory perception. You know, there's a vibration that is completely readable scientifically, I might add, that we each have between ourselves, whether that's a voice on a telephone or it's shaking somebody's hand. You know, we have a sensory perception. So, Jay, I hope that answers, and I hope I answered that in an email back. So just addressing that again, you know, for anybody else who's, because there's been a few times that question's been asked to me, Doug. So mm-hmm. I hope that clears it up. You know, I'm hoping.
Good. I'm sure it did. That makes sense, too. All right. So I have another question that was sent to me actually just a few days ago of a paranormal nature. Actually, I've gotten this question in its principal form quite a number of times over the years. And a nice person who had taken a picture while they were on vacation in Dubai not too long ago, took a picture of her husband, as they were at a hotel in Dubai. It was at nighttime, and a very pretty pool in the background at this hotel. Anyway, in this picture, kind of in front of her husband was this long white vortex-like thing, and inside this vortex you could see an orb, and it was kind of looked like it was a path, you know, it was like a long vortex with this orb in it. And she felt that it was paranormal in nature, but wanted to get a second opinion. So I looked at it. I looked at the EXIF info, EXIF, if you're not familiar with it. And the flash was 1/16 of a second, so it's a bit long. And the reason the shutter was open so long was because it was nighttime, and the flash fired as well. So what was the nature of this orb vortex thing? It was airborne particles, dust, contamination. Let me explain why. And interestingly, when it comes to orbs, this is almost like a faith-based thing. It's it can stir passions like religion can. And
you're bursting my bug.
Yeah, it's like if you're an orb believer, you'll defend it to the death almost, just like religious beliefs. And if you're not an orb believer, you know, you're going to fight the other way. So let's talk about these orbs, because so many people get these round, white, sometimes they're very bright, sometimes they're kind of pale, sometimes they can even be colored a little bit. They get these in a lot of photographs these days, and they think, you know, of course the rumor is going around, hey, this is, you know, poor dead Aunt Martha who's coming back to pay us a visit. And, you know, and it sounds intriguing because they start showing up. Well, here's why they are not paranormally significant or even compelling at all. And it's all based on Occam's razor. Occam was a 13th century monk, and he basically wrote that the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, that KISS principle. But basically what he wrote is the simplest explanation is likely the correct one in the absence of all the information. This is also similar to the scientific principle of parsimony, basically keeping it simple, and the simplest explanation is the desired one. you know, when there's not enough information available. Well, here's the deal. With a camera, you've got your depth of field, and that's the area that the picture is in focus. Obviously, if you focus your camera, you're going to have an area that's in focus and some areas that's not in focus. If you have a wide depth of field, then, you know, infinity is going to be in focus. If you have a narrow depth of field, whatever's in front of you is going to be in focus, and whatever's in the background is going to be out of focus. So you got this depth of field, this area that's in focus to the naked eye. Now, with these orbs have really made their kind of their debut into our consciousness since the late 90s, when these compact digital flash cameras kind of came into onto the market. And if you look at a compact digital flash camera, the flash is very close to the lens, and that is the culprit. That is why you pick up so much dust, and that's what exactly what happens when you flash a picture. The flash bounces off the dust, and it could be moisture, it could be an insect, it could be some kind of airborne contaminant. They call it CPCs, close proximity contaminants, and most of the time they're very, very close to the camera, within 4 inches. Sometimes they can be beyond the other side of that depth of field, so they can actually be obscured or obstructed by another object. That kind of gives the appearance of this orb coming out of something or something like that. But they're simply obscured. The light from the flash is obscured or obstructed by another object. And so that's what's causing these orbs. And a lot of folks can say, well, you know, I'm thinking of so-and-so, and will you let us take your picture? And they've said, you know, I took 20 pictures before that and nothing. And then I ask if I can take their picture, and then I get this orb. Well, you know what? That's simply coincidence. They're just Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is likely the correct one. And here's the deal. I want to believe, too. I really do. I want to believe. But there's nothing in an orb that suggests that we take this leap from what exactly is causing this to, oh, that's a spirit. I mean, that's a big leap. There's nothing in the picture to suggest it's paranormal. It's just kind of come about in, I don't know, social circles, especially in the ghost hunter community. A lot of them believe in this kind of thing. In fact, one university professor wrote a book, The Orb Project. He and I have kind of gone back and forth when he actually believes that they are higher level spirit entities. And every one of his arguments I can easily refute and have. And there's just nothing there, folks. So when you see an orb in a picture, you have a couple of options. You live with it, you take another picture, or you get a better camera. Honestly, you need an SLR or a DSLR, digital SLR camera, where the flash is further away from the lens. When the flash is further away from the lens, you don't get these orbs. And that's why you rarely will get them with a film camera, with a SLR camera, a nice camera. So they're not...
Oh, you should clean your lens, too.
Well, obviously you should clean the lens, but you know, you're going to have airborne particles. Here's the thing to do.
Don't clean it with a Kleenex.
No.
Don't use a Kleenex.
No. Get one of those microfibers. Cloths.
Microfibers, but there's also, because I have a couple of photographers in the family, there's these carbon kinds of sponges, but they're very, very soft, and then it has a brush. So there's these little tools you can get that are specifically designed for camera lenses, and that's a good thing to just occasionally clean your lens, because particles will stick to that. You know, we have... Again, there's moisture in the air. There's lots of stuff in the air that can stick. It will stick to glass. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at think about windows, you know, and how you get your windows get dusty, dirty, filmy. You know, there's going to be stuff on your camera lens. So, you know, I had to learn that the hard way.
No,
hey,
well,
look at the orbs I have.
And I'll tell you, if you see an orb or a ball of light with your naked eyes, now we'll talk. Now, of course, that could be ball lightning, but that's so rare that it almost never happens. But, you know, hey, you see something like that, hey, let's talk. You know, now we may have something, especially if you've got a witness, two or more people.
That's when I don't have my camera.
Yeah.
I never have my camera when I see one of those.
Well, and most
I mean, I've
don't.
Actually had that happen. I've had that happen, truly, where a white, like, and it, think of it as a ball of smoke, like it's circular, it's orbish, you know, as we get that picture in our minds of the visual of an orb. But it kind of whooshes, that's the way I've seen it. It's not once or twice, but a few times. And it just takes me aback because it's so visual. You know, I mean, it's in a different dimension visual. You know, just for the record, the eye to the brain does filter out, it filters out a lot of information. There are little particles floating around and little kind of lights and bubbles kind of floating around the air all the time. But we filter out information that we don't need. That's the beauty of the brain. It cannot, will not retain all of that information. Sometimes if there's been any kind of organic shift in your body where the brain is adjusting itself, you will see stuff that's not there. Mm-hmm. And which is different, I might add, than actually seeing different dimensions of energies and beings, multiple dimensions, which is kind of a fascinating discussion we could maybe approach some other time. But think of it as there's layers of life and life within life. But the brain will sometimes let its guard down. You know, if you see that, you know how the sun comes in the window and you start to see all the dust particles.
I was thinking of that,
floating?
Too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so you say, oh, wow, boy, is the air ever dusty. You know, wow, the sun is shining in there. Well, imagine that that's going on all the time. So then you see it sometime when the light is not shining, and it's just that the brain let its filter down. Now, there's also little light particles. Now, if you've ever had an eye exam where, you know, the optometrist is putting on these little glasses. Yeah, and then you say, whoa, what is that with these particular lenses? It's because it's taken the filter off of your brain. And you see all these floaters around. They are there all the time. So this is where in my journey to understand what it is I do, because it fascinates me. What do I do when I have a psychic experience? What is that? Because I want to explain it. But the only way to explain it is to get to the bottom of it in what has a perfectly logical, sensible, rational, scientific explanation. And it's hugely disappointing for a lot of time. The beauty is that when I do finally nail it, that there is no explanation for this. You know, Doug, you and I had a conversation the other day where you had a thought about somebody that you haven't heard from in a long time. And lo and behold, what was it, the next day they phoned you. And I said, geez, you caught, that's the psychic experience. Mm-hmm. To me, if it's like that, there is a perfect example of some kind of universal Akashic record, telepathic
entanglement.
Absolutely. You know, quantum entanglement, where you became conscious for 1 second of somebody's name, a thought, and you, put it aside, and lo and behold, they're there. See, it's something that is filtered into our consciousness. We became aware of it. That is a psychic experience. Now, how then do I expand on that? Well, the only way to expand on that is then to know what it's not. So, and I get to know myself better and just be really honest with, oh, that's not being psychic at all. That's just being really observant. Or that's just being, okay, something in my body has changed. My hormones are out. You know, any number of things. Because organics rule. Our biology rules our human experience. I truly, truly believe this, that, and, you know, for the grace of age, you learn, you go back, you look back to when you're through adolescence, in your 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, you say, oh, I see how my body was ruling this, ruling that. Yeah, it influenced my thinking here. It influenced my experience there. Now, it may not be as, you know, dominant in being able to view that in men as it is women. Women are very cyclic, and there's, you know, different hormonal factors. But usually there is some kind of physicality that influences what we see, think, feel, and all of our sensory perceptions. So, you know, we just have to be brutally honest with ourselves. But once you get past that ego-bent stuff, you know, because I had to deal with that myself, it's like, oh, man. But just don't, you know, this word, Doug, I love what you say, but don't take it so seriously. It has been a repeat in my brain for many, many years. I'm taking it far too seriously. So I have to lighten. Once I lighten up a little bit, see the humor of it, and see the humor of myself, like, oh, geez, I'm so disappointed. I thought that was an orb, you know, and get past that. Then I can see what's really there and deal with the really good stuff, because there is so much really good stuff to study and look into. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we got about 8 minutes left, and we hopefully might have time for another question or two. Do you have one that you'd like to get out?
I have one on
relationships.
No, go ahead, Doug. Go ahead.
Well, if you've got one, we'll divvy it up. If you don't, then we'll talk about relationships as the last one.
Okay,
what would you like to do?
I have, let me throw this one out there, because I'm thinking maybe this might help, and in relationships it might connect.
Okay.
Somebody, many times, I've been trying to get in touch with my late mother. Other family members say they've seen her spirit. Why can't I? Why doesn't she come to me? You know, and
good question.
Very often people want to have some kind of that psychic experience of, you know, somebody that, you know, they've lost. And there are, because I know we're pressed for time, there's always a whole number of questions that I ask people. But the biggest one is, if you try too hard, it's not going to happen. It's, again, our own abilities and perceptions. For one thing, maybe that mother's not coming to anybody, but they only think she is, you know, so which a belief system will rule everything. So the other is, why doesn't somebody come to me? Well, maybe they have, you're just not seeing it. Why, you know, why can't I see it? Well, because maybe you're trying too hard. So there's a number of things to check in with, but mostly, why do you need to? This would be the bigger question to me. What is it that in you that needs to see your mother? You know, why do you feel, so is there something left unsaid?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something you feel that, you know, there's some dynamic, I don't know, do you want your mother to apologize to you for your childhood? Like, I don't know. I mean, there's issues. People have issues. And there's a lot of unresolved issues. So that's what I try to get to the bottom of. That's not to say spirits aren't there all the time, but not all spirits are there all the time. Some of them ascend. Some of them, once they leave, they say, oh, man, I'm so out of here. You know, they don't have a need to come back. A lot don't. But ask yourself why you need to, what the point is, and maybe work through some of the issues. A lot of people, I'm going to say this too, when they lose somebody, part of their spirit goes with them. Now, just to explain that, I find that a lot of people who have lost someone feel minimized afterward. They get depressed, they get sad, and they can't quite get it. It's because a part of them, in some odd, strange, mystical, mysterious kind of way, has died with the one who has passed on.
Well, we say that from time to time, you know, when so-and-so died, part of me died.
Exactly. So what you do is you call your own spirit back. Call your own spirit out loud. Now, if it is somebody's mother, I say, picture your mother's face in your mind and call your own name back out loud. Your mother is gone. You are not. So you don't, your mother doesn't need you. She's fine. You come back to your own body, live fully in your own life. So calling your spirit back to be whole in your own spirit is critical. Now, that would be a first step to maybe developing an ability to see her mother at some other time, should that happen. So I hope that answers it. So I hope that ties in to your relationship question somehow, Doug.
Well, this particular relationship question is kind of a composite of, based on quite a number that I've gotten over the years, essentially about the same thing. And it doesn't have to do with spirits. It just simply has to do with toxic relationships. And so often it's the question is posed by a female who is in a relationship, either married or not married, usually married, but not always. Usually kids, but not always. And it's often with someone who has an addiction, especially alcoholism. But it doesn't really, an addiction is not required. It's just a simple relationship problem. And it's a toxic relationship. And they, what do I do? You know, how do I fix this? And the answer in a nutshell, and I'm going to keep this brief because of time constraints, but the answer in a nutshell is simply, you fix you. You know, in order to have healthy relationships, we must be healthy ourselves. That means we need to have a healthy self-concept. We need to have a good opinion of ourselves, good self-esteem. And the way you get that is through education, personal improvement, personal growth, knowledge. Because if you want your outside world to change, you got to change your inside world first. That's just it. So my advice to people like that is, if you're in a relationship where there's abuse, abusiveness, verbal abuse, and if there's physical abuse, you know, one time is one time too many. You know, there's no excuse for any of that. And so sometimes you just got to split. You've got to flee. And, well, what will I do for work? I don't know what you'll do. You need to work that out. This is your journey. And it's, you know, it's your path. You've got to work that out, but you can't submit to that kind of disrespect from anybody. And that's true of all of us. You know, anytime somebody takes more from a relationship they give and they're unwilling to change, the relationship is over, period, end of subject. So you know, whatever you got to do, take care of it, make it happen. Don't play the victim, don't be a martyr. Take your power back. I said that earlier. It's literally the panacea for just about everything that ails you. Take your power back. Stand tall. Stand up erect. You know, be powerful. Because you are powerful. We all are. But we often give our power away. Don't give it away. Retain it. And that will take you a long way to a healthy relationship, first and foremost with yourself, and then of course with others. So we've had a chance to talk about some of these different questions we've got. Maybe we'll do this again in the future. We appreciate everyone's time tonight. Go ahead, Vicki.
No, I just wanted to say that album so fast as they usually do, but tonight it's unusual. Thanks to everybody for supporting our show. We continue listenership, and we're really glad for that. We hope it's helping everybody. See you next week.
And if you like the show, let other people know. And if you're interested in more information on what we talk about in these shows, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. The degree program is one of a kind. It's unique. It will teach you life skills, communication skills, critical thinking skills, relationship skills. There's a lot of meat in it. There's a lot of profound concepts that will simply help you to be more successful in life. So, with that said, join us next week for another timely topic. Thanks to Dr. John Hightower for producing behind the scenes, and we wish everyone a great week. Good night.